Hi, welcome to Night School, and the topic for today is going to be the general topic of rebellion, specifically rebelling against yourself and all the things that lead up to that and what that means, at least to me. Because, you know, rebellion is so valued, or at least it has been in Western society, the idea of being a rebel. And it's that kind of post-1960s or even post-1950s youth culture, because it's even before the hippie movement and all of that. You had greasers, you know, they were the cool characters in movies, the, you know, rebels, not necessarily tragic rebels, like Rebel Without a Cause, but just rebellious sort of characters. And it goes back much further than that. But I think we started to see it on a widespread level in the post-50s, post-1960s youth culture and then counterculture. So the idea of a rebel was inherently good. If you're the little guy fighting the theoretical big guy, that is just seen as good. And parents of that generation, and by that I mean people who, say, grew up in the 1950s and 60s and then became parents later, they would kind of encourage their kids. They would be like, oh, he's going through that rebellious phase, that expected, almost built-in rebellious phase, which is the sort of irony of that, the idea of that someone has an expected rebellious phase. Because you think about what rebellion truly is, and it's when someone, be it an individual or a group, is pushed so far that they basically break and try to break that thing that pushed them or what they think pushed them. But, you know, the fact that it became this thing that was sort of built in and expected, and even though parents didn't like their kids, say, listening to certain music or smoking pot or doing whatever, having, you know, flippant attitudes toward just living a normal life, you know, they would dislike their parents' lives and see them as boring, all of that, even though there was that component of parents being like, I don't know what's wrong with him, you know, he's just, he won't listen to me. There's still overall, I think, and you see it in movies and TV from the last several decades, it was sort of expected, an expected rebellion. And with rock and roll, with punk, with, you know, underground music, you know, they're created this much deeper resource for that sort of behavior, where it's not just someone not listening to their parents and doing what was available to them at high school, say hanging out with the wrong crowd and that kind of thing, but there were actually these subcultures developing that were based around rebellion, and they didn't really end after, say, high school either. These are things that sometimes continued and continue to this day, and we're seeing that now where you know, we live in a world where tattoos are commonplace, even in high-tech companies, even in traditionally conservative places like offices. We see that tattoos are even celebrated. We see them on TV commercials where it'll show somebody in an office, you know, living an adult life, but they have, you know, a dyed hair, or they have tattoos or piercings, things like that. So we've seen how, like, what are typically seen as, we've seen how, like, the qualities, the superficial qualities associated with being rebellious have just kind of become a part of everything. And I'm not pointing that out as a criticism. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, look, you know, look at the way rebellion's co-opted. You think you're a rebel, huh? Well, you were just on an AT&T ad. A guy who looks just like you was on an AT&T ad. You know, I'm not trying to say that at all. Because I definitely, even though I don't have tattoos and all that, I'm someone who's been involved in underground music and I've been involved in weird stuff my entire life, and I never grew out of it. I'll say that. I grew up, but I didn't grow out of those things. And, you know, the roots of a lot of my interests go back to when I was a teenager or even a child, even when I was very young. I've kind of seen things go full circle, actually, where I feel like right now I have a lot more interests in common with who I was as a kid. I mean, they've evolved. I have a much different perspective on those things. But in terms of just the interests themselves, it's kind of funny how many similarities there are between what I'm into now and what I was into as a kid, or what made me interested or engaged me. And what's actually funny about that is that that's come kind of as the result of me rebelling against myself. And I think that was sort of the final stage. I can't say that. I can't say it's the final stage in the rebellious evolution the rebellion. Well, because an evolution itself is pure rebellion. It's like your environment is throwing something at you that you can't deal with, so you rebel by evolving over a long span of time. Your behavior changes in the immediate, but over time, your species evolves, or at least your specific, even just your specific DNA strand, you're part of a species. The members of your species who don't rebel against the environment won't make it. So, you know, the creatures that rebel against a dangerous environment are the ones who prolong the species and cause that species to evolve. And I'm not saying I play any kind of role in anything like that, and God knows if I'll ever even have children. But it has been interesting to sort of feel myself finally rebel against myself. Maybe there will be more steps of rebellion after that. I don't know. But you think about the way that someone initially rebels, and it's like you rebel against your parents, then you rebel against this quote-unquote society, which people still love to point out. Like, that's what kind of amazes me, especially about this generation. And by this generation, I guess I could be referring to any number of them, but that's what sort of makes me laugh is how people still see that as a valid argument. Oh, it's because of society. I'm fighting society. Something as, you know, multifaceted and amorphous and mutates as much and as often as society gets the blame for so much. And I guess that's why it gets the blame, because it is so amorphous and it does mutate so much. Back and forth. It doesn't mutate into one thing, but it goes back and forth, and it just has all these different shapes and all these different looks. That's why it's so easy for so many different people under the same societal umbrella. That's why it's so easy for them to blame society. So many different people can blame society for everything because it is such a mutant concept. So it can basically be whatever you want it to be, especially when you're trying to find blame with something. But, you know, that's sort of the progression that people take is you rebel against your parents, you rebel against the government, you rebel against society, and then you find outlets for that rebellion, which are often, you know, with kids, it's things like it's in the arts, it's music, I guess movies and TV. I mean, I guess you kind of, I don't really see that as the same thing. It doesn't have the same, like, you don't join groups. You don't join up with, like, subcultures that are based around movies and TV, but you tend to do that with music because it's a soundtrack to what you're doing in your life, whatever, blah. But music just has that attraction and, you know, visual art to a lesser extent, but you don't really see it with movies and TV. You see it a lot, most often with music, almost exclusively with music, really. So it's like you find outlets for that aggression and, you know, that's why things like rock and roll developed the way they did. But then someone even rebels against rock and roll. That's the funny thing. Rock and roll was the pinnacle of rebellion, youth rebellion, when it came out in the 1950s. And then you go forward 20 years, and punk rock is rebelling against rock, because rock has become the thing. And that just seems so obvious to point out that I hate to even put it that way, that, like, oh, eventually the rebellious thing becomes the standard. But that's how evolution works as well, where it's like the thing that's rebelling against the environment eventually just becomes the standard because it took that standard for the species to survive. But anyway, so rock and roll becomes the thing that you're rebelling against, and then punk rock becomes the thing you're rebelling against. You find something else, hardcore, any number of subgenres that came about in the 1980s. All the different weird mutant facets of underground culture, they split off. And, you know, people get deeper into underground metal and hate punk rock or whatever it is. It's not necessary. People don't necessarily hate the thing that came before it or anything like that, but they definitely are looking for something else. They're looking to push something further. And it's a game that you can keep on playing. It's like you keep going one step further and you get sick. Even if the thing that you were that was previously there, like the punk rock or the, you know, death metal, whatever it is, the industrial music, whatever it is. And I do think music is the best example of this. But it could also be visual art. It could be a form of, you know, experimental art. I don't really have the words for it right now, but still, music is the best example. But even if like the new form doesn't outright reject the old form, there's still this need to keep pushing and this feeling that the old form is old hat. Old hat. I love that. My favorite scientific term is old hat. It's just old hat. But, you know, it keeps on going, and it's really this game that people can play pretty much forever until they get to a point where they're just like, I'm just ready to, you know, I graduated college, I'm just ready to be normal. Because it's a game that's not really fun to keep on playing, because there's really not much reward to just rebelling forever, which is why when you see actual, like, military, societal rebellions, you know, when a country has a group that rebels and tries to take over the government and succeeds, they don't just keep rebelling, they become the government. It's like, say there's a coup. It's a great word. A coup. A coup. Is that a coup? But when you have a coup, it's like the coup doesn't just keep going on forever. And if it does, it's because new people are creating a new coup. It's really just a rebellion goes, and then it becomes the thing, and then something else rebels from that, and it just goes on forever. And so on an individual level, or just a small social group level, you really can't just keep rebelling forever, or else you'll make yourself crazy. I mean, people get into drugs and alcohol, and that's one way to rebel forever. One way to rebel forever is to destroy yourself, or just create an extremely toxic, basically to create an environment around yourself, around the group that you're associated with, that's just a toxic cloud. That's one way to rebel forever, is to be an asshole, or just to destroy yourself, or to be like just sick, just to make yourself sick one way or another. You know, because that way you always have something to be upset about. You know, if you have an addiction, you always have a way to not feel good, because rebellion ultimately comes from not feeling good, from some sort of averse environmental influence. I don't know. So there are ways to make yourself feel shitty enough to where you never want to stop rebelling, and you never do. Whether that's just staying the same sort of rebel forever, like a 50-year-old punk rocker who just drinks all the time and still lives in a squat, and you know will eventually die. You know, because only they eventually die. Nobody else dies, just them. But still, there's that sort of person. There's the person, though, who keeps pushing. They keep changing. They're like an octopus changing colors, but they never really become normal. And like, I definitely have felt myself falling into that trap at different times, where it's like nothing's good enough and I've got to keep changing. And for some people, that means, as I said before, eventually they just get a normal job. They decide that, you know, I have this strong, or they don't decide, but they just are overwhelmed eventually with the feeling that, hey, there's something inside of me that wants to do the thing. And the thing is to, you know, get married and have a kid and have a stable life. And even if I still pull out my old, you know, hardcore records or whatever, even if I'm still into those things, even if I still have tattoos, I ultimately want this stable life. So it just becomes this sort of superficial rebellion, or you just give that up entirely. It gets sold at a garage sale, or you just tuck it into a drawer that your kids aren't supposed to look in because it's daddy's dead Kennedy's drawer. I don't fucking know. So there's that, you know, where it's like, that's the way people go. Or, you know, most people don't even get that far. Most people just, they go through like a very, very light rebellious phase. They got into rap. They were a wigger for like 2 weeks in junior high, or they were into like whatever rock. They were into nu metal. They were into some rock band that MTV played for a minute. And then by the time they're in college, it's like they're already on the fast track to normalcy. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And there's a lot of good involved with that. And my issue was that I got deep into weird stuff early on. And then I sort of rebelled against that by like presenting a normal face. But I maintained my weird interests and delved into those even deeper. But I always kind of liked, and to me, in retrospect, it's very immature, but I liked that I could just kind of be the boy next door on the surface who watched football, which was me. You know, that was definitely me. Like, I wasn't a fake person doing that. But I liked that I could rebel against the expectations of being, like, into metal and, you know, underground experimental music and being an artist and all that bullshit that I love. It's bullshit that I love. Doesn't make it not bullshit. And then also embrace the bullshit of, you know, being kind of a jock, you know, or being, like, a just a normal dude. I valued wearing those different hats, even though it created a lot of weird issues. I mean, it does. Like, when you're wearing different hats is difficult, you know? It's not as difficult as it should be, but it's just, it kind of goes into, like, the way we present ourselves, and we like to present ourselves as a specific identity. So what do you do? That's the big question, like, the multi-generational question that we all ask each other. And I feel like that question is becoming less relevant. But I did meet a kid from high school, or a kid that I grew up with in elementary school, and I hadn't seen him for many years. Then I saw him a few years ago out of nowhere, and his first question was like, so what do you do? And, you know, I wish that question was aimed at, like, well, what is your day like? What do you do when you wake up? What do you do at 11 o'clock on a Saturday when you don't have anything else to do? What do you do? Because that'd be an interesting question, a way to really get to know somebody. But it just means, like, what's your job? Like, what's your basic core identity? And it's like, you don't want to respond, like, I wear a few different hats. I got a few different hats I wear. You know, you don't want to respond with that. I got a podcast. You want to know who? What do I do? Listen to my podcast. You'll never want to talk to me again. You'll never want to hear about my hats. But for me, I did. I found a lot of value in wearing those different hats, because those different hats allowed me to kind of rebel against, like, things that people thought, or like this or that. And I wasn't really rebelling against myself at the time. I was maybe rebelling against myself in a very superficial way by flipping between one thing and then another thing that people think can't coincide with that thing. Things that give people cognitive dissonance. Like, there's that weird thing where it's almost like you can't support professional football and also, you know, be into, like, subversive shit. You know, it's like there's that idea that you can't hold those two things at once. And then I feel like the immature part of me was like, oh, I'm into these things that aren't supposed to be put together, you know, like, and I kind of gave myself a pat on the back over that, which, you know, it was just immature, you know. It's just thinking, like, I don't know, you find ways to give yourself a pat on the back. So that's kind of how things went for me, whereas, like, my normalcy, my, like, mainstream side was kind of a rebellion against the other side that was deeper into weird shit. And then those kind of have gone back and forth throughout my entire life. But when things really changed for me, when I really started to understand, like, what rebelling is when I started to rebel against myself. Like, and by myself, I don't mean these interests. I don't mean these phases. I don't mean these things going on around me. Because ultimately, all those things that you're going through when you're a so-called rebel, when you're growing up and you're rebelling against things, when you're a teenage rebel, a college-age rebel, when you're an adult rebelling, you're rebelling against these things that are going on around you. They could be political, because that's where a lot of it ends up going, is you become part of a political group, or you hold an ideology or some values that allow you to just constantly feel like a rebel. And what's funny is that happens on both ends of the political spectrum, where people who are extremely far right feel like they're constantly rebelling against this liberal monopoly, like the liberal media, all the government making all these socialist chess moves. You know, that's how the far right feels. They feel that they are the rebels. And they'll even call themselves that. They embrace the whole Confederate idea, the Confederacy. They feel that they are the rebels. And then on the left, it's even more obvious that they all feel like they're the rebels. And you see that reflected in movies and TV, where the good guys are often the rebels, and they tend to have, you know, what we would associate with more left-leaning values. You look at something like Star Wars, probably the most obvious example, where it's the rebels against the Empire, and the Empire is very fascist. You know, I was going to say pseudo-fascist, but no, they're just straight-up fascist. Their outfits are modeled after the Third Reich, and their behavior is just oppressive and uniform. Whereas the rebels are a ragtag bunch. They're a bunch of misfits, and they have good values. They're open-minded, and they're fighting the man. And you see that in a lot of different stories. Even just something like The Outsiders, one of my all-time favorite stories, both the book and the movie, both a great example of a book and a movie. They're just amazing. Don't get tired of that story at all. But that's the story, is about the greasers versus the socias, and the socias are the rich kids. the South Side Soch, and they're kind of the empire. They're the good old boys. They get away with everything. They treat other people like shit, but they end up going to the fancy colleges and drive the nice cars and wear the nice clothes, whereas the greasers are just, you know, the low class, you know, just ruffians. But it's about them winning out, at least even just temporarily. You see that story play out a lot, and so it's and we kind of associate that with liberalism on a wider level. I would say liberalism and just leftism as general is more commonly associated with the little guy, even though they're in favor of big government and all that. That's what's interesting about it. That's why nothing really fits. That's why our perceptions are often so off. As you think about the little guy who's constantly rebelling, the guy who believes in anarchy and believes in socialism and all of this stuff, and it's like ultimately that person is more supportive of a larger government hand, which you would think would be associated with the empire, the big mass that's just controlling everything. But nothing really works the way that we think it does, and I'm not pretending to know how anything works. Meanwhile, I'm just dropping references to evolution, to this, to that. What I do know is I know youth rebellion, and ultimately, like, you know, I went through all these different phases, rebelling against this thing, rebelling against that thing, rebelling against other rebels, because that's something you do a lot of if you value rebellion, is you constantly have to rebel against the other rebels around you. Even if they're cool, and even if they're people you should be friends with, you'll find reasons why they're not rebellious enough, or they're not rebelling in the right way. And you see that sort of factionalism everywhere. It's not just in a group of teenagers where, like, one group just discovered the Clash and the other kids are getting into Black Flag, and now, you know, one group's calling the other group a bunch of posers. It's not even just then. You see it in Islam, or you think about the way that Islam developed with the factionalism, because you had these groups develop, and then one group developed out of another. They rebelled against the others. This group understands the true word of Allah as heard by Muhammad, and then this group doesn't, and then you end up with thousands of years of just killing. And each one feels like they are the rebel who's fighting the man. So it's not just, this stuff just doesn't just play out in high school hallways. It also plays out in the Middle East on a huge level that impacts everybody. And buildings fall, and, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy how it all plays out. But it ultimately comes, it all comes from this just small difference in opinion. Like, I'm the one who is rebelling for the right reasons, and you're not. And then there's also that tendency, rebels tend to see other people, no matter what, as part of a bigger mass. Like, one group that feels like they are the rebels will look at another group that could be justifiably seen as another rebel group, and they'll see that group as the man, even though they are just as weak or just as strong. It could go either way. They're on equal footing with the group that's seeing them that way. So it's kind of funny how that plays out. There's this tendency to, like, blow up every, I don't mean literally, but I'm to magnify, let's put it that way. Can't be talking about the other stuff and then say blow up like that. But yeah, there's a tendency to magnify your enemies and see them as part of something larger, when the reality is you're both fucking part of something larger. You're both part of the goddamn universe. And that's been kind of, you know, part of my big revelation of the last few years is that I'm just a part of the universe, but then also realizing how fucking big that is. You know, there's this tendency like, oh, you know, that generation, each generation thinks the generation after them thinks they're the center of the universe. Oh, that group, you know, the baby boomers, they think they're the center of the universe. Oh, the hippies, they think they're the center. These kids, the millennials, they think they're the center of the universe. And to a large degree, I think it's true. I think that we all, when we're growing up, we don't really have any reason to not think we're the center of the universe. So why wouldn't we rebel against everything around us? Why wouldn't we do that? But then you realize that you're a part of everything. And this sounds like some lame, like, psychedelic revelation. And I've really been influenced very little by psychedelics. I've experimented with them a little bit, less than you might think. I've certainly tried them. But a lot of my revelations about life have been not through the use of substances. And God knows I've used substances. I've abused substances. But a lot of my revelations about life have not come through that. And I'm not discrediting. I think those things are great for those things. And I mean, I think they've led to a lot of great thought. But I also think I don't like to get sidetracked with that counterculture stuff. Like I like listening to like Terrence McKenna and Timothy Leary. And it took me, I had to rebel against myself in order to do that, because those guys to me were already old hat. By the time that I was kind of delving into this stuff, by the time I was a high schooler or a college student who might have been interested in those sorts of characters, it seemed like they were just part of something that I didn't need to get into. I was just like, they're their own mainstream. And it's only been in recent years that I've delved into those guys more. And I love when they delve into like psychedelic talk, but I also don't think it's necessary. And I feel like it's a distraction, and it plays too into this. I don't know. That's a whole other topic, and I feel like by even saying that, I'm just rebelling against something I don't need to rebel against. The important part is like the realization that I'm a part of something much larger than myself, and to be continually rebelling against the things around me is just a pointless, never-ending game. And that doesn't mean I still don't have that chip on my shoulder. Of course I do. I've never been able to shake that chip of just needing to kind of assert my individuality, or, you know, a lot of it ties into being a creative person, a quote-unquote creative person. But still, I think, you know, I wouldn't have realized that I'm a part of everything if I hadn't just taken that final step to rebel against what I thought were just my true values, which were that cynical, self-centered part of myself that thought that, oh, this is just me. I'm cynical. I do things my own way. I'm my own person in this entire universe. I'm my own thing. And I'm a critic. I'm a judge. I'm scared all of the time, but that comes out in the form of some weird, edgy, you know, as I said, chip on my shoulder, you know, and then rebelling against that, not really realizing that I could rebel against that, and being honestly afraid to rebel against that, afraid to rebel against something that you thought was a core part of your personality, and not just like the kind of jerk, not just rebelling against the jerk. There's a lot more to it than that, but it's like, I would say rebelling against what you thought was like, what I thought was like the best version of myself based on what I've taken in throughout my entire life. Say 30 years, I'm almost 33 now, but I think this process really started in me after I turned 30. And the person I thought I was at 30, despite all of the negativity, despite all of the self-destructive behavior, the drinking, the weird, you know, unbalanced emotions, despite all of that, I thought that I had the best information and that, you know, I had the best perspective on things. Therefore, whoever I was at that time, at 30 years old, as someone hitting 30 years old, I thought that person was the best that I could be, essentially. It's like, well, of course I'm this way, you know, and I felt that if I were to reject that, not even reject it, but if I were to rebel against it, if I were to rebel against who I was by the age of 30, I thought that I would be basically saying to myself, oh, like, you know nothing. And that is essentially what I said. That's ultimately, I think, what you have to say to yourself. Turns out you don't know anything. But you think that you're going to, like, lose your eye for things. You think you're going to lose the stuff that makes you you, that makes you have that critical eye, for better and worse, because critics often have good things to say. And that's a revelation, too. We hear critic and we think a negative review, a bad movie review. Critic. He's a critic. He gave the movie a half a star. But really, you can be a critic who says things that are good, that are positive, that are constructive. You know, you can mutate. I think that's the thing, is I've always known I can wear different hats and that allows for a certain amount of mutation. But the truth is you can mutate even further without losing anything. And I know I've said this before, but I think as I started to change my view of things and as I started to embrace a more open, engaged with the world attitude, not to say I'm that engaged. I mean, I definitely retreat. I definitely hide even now. But as I started to feel more engaged, even just sitting at home, not leaving the house, I feel more engaged with the world around me. And as that started to happen, is what I learned is that I know the road that goes back to where I was, and I can retrace it temporarily. I know where those streets go. It's like when you've been to someone's house a certain number of times, the first couple times, you're like, I don't really know how to get here. But eventually it just becomes, you just intuitively go there. If you're not paying attention, next thing you know, you're there. But you want to pay attention. If you're trying to change and you find yourself changing in a good way, you want to always know which turns you're making that lead back the way you came. But you still know them, and that's the important part. Like, I still know how to be a piece of shit, you know? I still know how to get to a place where I don't like anything, where anything that anybody says is boring, where I don't find very much joy in doing just basic things in life. I know how to get there, and sometimes it's good to go back there. Sometimes there are some days where I wake up and like, it could be, and learning how to use that for something better, not just to go back there and sit. Like, I don't see the point in just going back to that mindset and just sitting there and like, and just resting on it. Like, oh, I want to feel like a piece of shit today. Hey, today I decided to wake up and, I don't know what accent that is. It was almost going to be British, almost New York. A New York Brit. That's got to be, I don't know if I've ever heard that. A New York Brit. That's one that I'm going to work on. I'm going to work on a voice like that. Some long showers are ahead of me. But, you know, I don't want to go back down a dark road, even if I know the way to get there. And I'm very aware of myself going back down that road just so I can rest in that place where I once was. But I think you can go back there and use that as fuel. Sometimes I'll have days where I just don't really want to get through a workout or just don't want to finish something, don't want to do something. And I find myself, I'll put on maybe certain music because I've really become sensitive to the power of music. And some music is just truly, it truly captures some sort of dark magic that can take you right to that place. That's just like taking an airplane ride back to a place where you once were. And sometimes I'll do that. It's almost like a little ritual. It's almost like a weird little spell you put yourself under. It really is a spell. And you find yourself back there because it gives you that edge. Like if you're lifting weights or something and you hurt and you don't want to do it, and you'll just go back to that place where you feel that edge, and you use that to get through it. You use that to fight. It gives you a spike of adrenaline. It really does. And I sometimes experience it if I'm out, say, running. And it's not just fitness stuff. It's just fitness stuff is an obvious example, because getting that sort of spike of energy, it can just really make the difference if you're doing something athletic or getting exercise. But I've even had that experience. I was running yesterday, and it was just a painful run. I shouldn't have ran. But I was at a stoplight, and it was this really long stoplight, and I was wanting to finish my run. I didn't want my heart rate to go down, and I wasn't even thinking about that, but it's just that sort of feeling. Like, I don't want to be standing here for too long. And there was this little girl and her dad behind me, and the little girl was, like, complaining about the stoplight, which, hey, I was in the same boat, but still just hearing someone loudly complaining behind you while you're also irritated, it's like, you know, don't mention it. Don't mention what we're all thinking, kid. Finally the light turned, the crosswalk turned to walk, and this car like decided to take their free right then through the crosswalk, like as us pedestrians were looking to walk, someone decided to take their free right like a jerk off and like go through there. And I just felt that surge. I felt that surge of like, I didn't even get angry, but I just felt, because I was already starting to run through the crosswalk, I just felt that surge of that feeling, and I just shot through the crosswalk, and I probably looked like an autistic kid, like running from one high school class to the next one. I probably looked like that weird kid in school who like just decided to like, who just didn't, you probably had that kid at your high school who like ran from every class to the next. And not even because he was bullied in high school or anything. Maybe he was bullied earlier. So I do have empathy or sympathy, but it's like, it was just always so weird to see that kid like hunched over, like running, because he just didn't want to be in that hallway with all the kids, which is understandable. It's a fucking zoo. Anyway, that was me yesterday, and it was all because I felt that just surge. It was like I suddenly was back in that place, And so I feel like being able to access that place is great, but I feel like it's nice when you can just access it and you don't live there. And I really feel that rebelling against what I thought was my, I don't know, I think I'd put it this way. It's like you build up these structures of who you think you are, and you think that it comes from, you know, reasoning and logic and all these reasons, your experiences, and it just makes you into this, you know, you kind of like have fortified yourself with all this bullshit. You've built this fort. You fortified yourself into a fort, and you realize that it's all just bullshit. And it doesn't mean it's meaningless. It doesn't mean there isn't meaning to that bullshit. Like I was saying about growing up and going through phases, it doesn't mean that you're all, it doesn't mean the thing that you're rebelling against, just because it's, you realize it's bullshit, doesn't mean it sucks. Doesn't mean it's like bad. And if you take anything from this episode, just take the fact that I said bullshit doesn't necessarily suck. It doesn't mean it sucks. Just take that from it, if nothing else. But you'll realize that, yeah, you've built up so much bullshit around yourself that you think of as this unmoving structure, and it's who you're going to be forever. It's who you're going to be when you're 50. It's who you're going to be when you're dying on your deathbed. When you're dying on your deathbed, if you end up dying on your deathbed. I hear that not everybody dies on their deathbeds. Some people live forever on their deathbeds. Yeah, you just think it's going to be you forever because you think it's important, and you think if you let go of those things, you're going to be nothing. And maybe that's true, but that's like the orgasm of rebellion that you're working at your entire life. You're rebelling against everything so that ultimately you have this release, and then finally you're nothing. And isn't that what fucking Eastern spirituality is, where it's like you get caught in these double binds where it's like, oh, I want to be in the moment, and I want to feel good about that. But then if I end up thinking that I'm in the moment, it takes me out of the moment. And so you're constantly playing these games, and it's one of the horrors of meditation, where it's like, I'm supposed to be not thinking, but I'm thinking about how I'm not thinking. So I'm caught in this double bind. I'm caught in this never-ending loop. And you think that that's bad, but it's not. When you're caught in that constant fight, one side against the other, you're a fucking yin-yang symbol. It's a fucking, you end up feeling like this cliche, but it's a wonderful cliche. And you realize that just, you know, letting yourself be a part of that is actually how you're going to get where you're going. Being a yin-yang symbol is how you're going to cut out the bullshit that doesn't necessarily suck. but it really, that was my experience. And I imagine I'm not alone, is that you ultimately realize that through all that constant topsy-turvy, if I'm even using that right, all that like that washing machine of rebellion that spins one way, spins the next way, then shakes, then breaks, and then you fix it, and then it does the same thing, and then sometimes your clothes never dry off because your dryer sucks. Like that whole process of being a human being and just constantly fighting yourself and then finding new things that you think are like the new right direction for yourself, but then ultimately fighting against that. In the end, if you can just come to a point where you realize you're nothing, that when you take off those different hats you've been trying to wear your entire life, you're just the invisible man, and that's wonderful. Once you get to that fucking point, life feels a lot better. And it comes through the ultimate rebellion, which is rebelling against yourself, rebelling against the structure that you've created in yourself. And I feel like you can't tell that to a kid. That's why I think going through that back and forth, that constant up and down, back and forth, rebelling against everything around you, rebelling against, you know, people, ideas, society, this and that, and projecting that whole rebellion on your surroundings at a young age and through your developmental age. I mean, your entire fucking life is in development. But if you do that, you know, through those developmental ages, let's say from like definitely from puberty through college, if you just keep doing that, I feel like eventually you will, you know, become that, become nothing. You know, you'll become that, and you'll realize you can be anything in doing that. Yeah.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me.